So yesterday we talked a little bit about, we finished the section on open quantum systems. We talked about quantum maps or quantum operation, CPTP maps. And then we moved on to looking at tomography. And then you saw the answer of how many parameters we need to describe the evolution of one qubit. Somebody got the lottery and found that it needs 12. And then we started quantum error correction. So if our quantum systems are not open, and when you do experiments, they are never perfect. They are imperfection. And the idea of error correction is to deal with this. In fact, you must hear from time to time in other courses the problem of the information loss in black holes. So who knows about this either paradox or this question in science that if you have black hole, there seems to be a loss of information. And so gravity people look at this and they say, just that be it. You lose information. Particle physicists seems to be really upset that you lose information. And because they really like unitarity, and unitarity leaves all these constraints in the theories, and so it restricts things. When you are an experimentalist, you never see things which are unitary. It's only when you do quantum computing, you try really, really hard to approach unitarity as well as you can. You put all the effort, all your ideas, all your energy to kind of make things unitary, and you never achieve it. So there's a certain irony when I hear my friends, particle physicists, talking about the information loss in black holes. So what we'll see today, which is quite a funny thing, on error correction, we'll demonstrate error correction. And error correction tells you, with a little bit of resources, you can correct for errors. And there's a funny implication of this. Let's suppose that the fundamental theory of nature is not really quantum mechanics, but it is a small epsilon away in whatever measure you think, away from quantum mechanics. With error correction, even if nature is not really quantum mechanical at 100%, you can still build devices which will behave as well, kind of as near quantum mechanics as it does. So that's quite an interesting piece. Maybe the epsilon will be too large and one won't be able to do error correction, but this is an experimental question, right? So let's go and talk about, go back to error correction. Yesterday I talked about three elements we need to do error correction. We need to know the noise. Classically, it's bit flips. I also said that we'll assume that, or usually we assume that errors are independent from bit to bit. And this is not always true when the lightning hits your laptop. It's not true, but it works quite well. But it's also important to realize that error correction will work only for a certain subset of all the noise that you could think of. And it's easy to think about the noise which is impossible to correct. Suppose that there's a little devil or a little gremlin next to your machine, and every time you try to read a bit, it's between your measurement apparatus and you, and it randomly flips it. So there's nothing you'll be able to do, even if you think about it. So my point here is that there'll always be some noise that you cannot correct. And then it becomes an experimental question of, are the noise that we can correct, are they physically relevant? And certainly in the classical world it is. If you take a CD, you can do error correction on a CD, or there is error correction on a CD, and you can do the experiments yourself. And I did it, and I didn't take one of my best CD of nicest music. I went to buy a cheap one. You can take a needle, you can make a hole in a CD, you put it in the CD machine, and it still works. Now I'm thinking, maybe you guys don't know what a CD is. So maybe it doesn't ring a bell. But if you go and talk to your parents or your grandparents, they will tell you there are these things called CDs. And you can make scratch on a CD, which are radials. And the error correcting is very good for the radial errors. But if you make a scratch which is around the CD, it doesn't work very well. And the reason is, if you have a CD and you kind of move it around on the table or something like this, a scratch will be mostly radial. So it corrects, my point to come back is only some type of noise, but they seem to be physically relevant. Then we talked about an encoding, and the simplest I assumed that the error would be independent. In fact, if you assume that there is only one error, so you either have on my encoded qubit, there'll be only either nothing has happened, no error, or there'll be an error on the last qubit, the second one, the third one, then this error correcting code would correct exactly. So because once we have only this, you take the error correction procedure, which is take the majority and you get back to 000, and then you've done it. If you assume that the noise is independent from bit to bit, then you'll also have the possibility of two errors, but which will go like p squared instead for small p. And then these ones you will not be able to correct, because if you take the majority here, it'll get 111, and it'll go. So the question is how to translate this in the quantum language. And at the end of the last lecture, I told you why it was not that obvious. Now I'm going to rephrase all of this so that hopefully it becomes obvious. So the first question, it was not obvious because the noise in quantum mechanics or the wave function evolves continuously. It doesn't seem to be discrete. So how do we, and we don't know how to do classical error correction for continuous system. We just know how to do it for digital system. So how do we do this quantum mechanically? So let's look at a generic qubit interacting with an environment. And so this is your qubit in the lab, and this is the rest of the universe. I'm making the assumption that the whole state of the universe is in a pure state. And that is good enough as an approximation for what we want to do. So the most generic evolution of this, the most generic evolution is such that the qubit remains the same, but the environment goes to the state zero, or it can flip and go to a different state of the environment. And if we have one, then you have a similar thing, or it can flip. Okay, and these four states of the environment can be all the same, they can be all different, they can be orthogonal or anything. And if you go and calculate all these parameters in there, you'll get the 12 parameters that we have for one qubit.
By the equal sign, you mean under semi-material.
Thank you. So goes to this under the evolution. So the question is, what happened to 0 plus beta 1? Okay, and then what I'm going to do is bring these things in. So alpha 0, epsilon 0, 0, plus alpha 1, 0, 1. And you guys have to check that I get all the states of the environment correctly. Okay, so I'm just taking this, putting it in there. And then I will do the same thing that you must have learned by now. Rewrite this in some funny way, the same way we've done for quantum teleportation. And here's what you can find if you write this. You'll get something like half of alpha 0 plus beta 1, which multiply epsilon 0 plus epsilon 1, 1. OK. Half of alpha 1 plus beta 0 of and then alpha 0 minus beta 1 I just rewrite it. If you look up here, there's no term alpha 0, epsilon 1, 1. You don't see it here. But what I've done is that I subtract it here with the minus. So I'm just kind of being a little bit tricky. And the reason why I want to do this is now look at these four states. Okay? This, let's call this psi. This is the unit matrix multiplied by 1. And this one is x multiplied by 1. This one is z. And this one, it's either xz or zx. And so I might have a phase error in my classical computation. So. Good. So I think it's x. I think it's this way. I take the z first, so I get the minus in here, and then I flip it. Okay? And now you start to recognize these. Okay? So these are a basis of operator for one qubit. Okay? You can think about this. This is the classical error that we were talking about here. But there's a new type of error quantum mechanically, which is z. So this says that you make a bit flip, a sign flip error on the state. And this is a combination of those two, or y. Okay? So the discretization of the noise comes in by thinking about the evolution of that system in that way. Okay? And these numbers here will give you the amplitude of these things coming in. So that's where the continuous piece comes in. In fact, we have a little bit of this. You remember when we talked on the first lecture, we talked about classical bit. I told you you had a 0 and a 1, and then we had the probability of between the two. When you do the evolution of this, there's a continuous evolution of how p could evolve. So you have a probability of getting this, probability of getting it. It would look continuous. We could have discretized it there too. Okay. Now let's do a small example. Suppose that, and it's not in my note, so you guys have to check to be sure that I don't make a mistake. And if I make a mistake, then it turns into a homework. Suppose that we have a state 0 plus beta 1. Okay, and we'll assume that it evolves unitarily just by adding a phase here. And what I want to show is that I can rewrite it as a combination of this and this. So there's a unitary evolution. So that qubit is a ZZ interaction with another qubit in a state which is not 0 or 1, so that it kind of adds a little bit of phase to that one. So it goes to alpha 0 plus e to the I theta beta 1. Okay? So my claim is that this can be written as 1 plus e to the I theta over 2 of alpha 0 plus beta 1. And 1 minus I theta over 2 alpha 0 minus beta 1. Okay? Is that okay? Let's look at the first coefficient. You have alpha here. Well, we don't have a e theta in front, but these two things are such that this and this cancel. So you half and half gives me the 1. I'm good. The next part, then it subtracts, so the 1 does it kind of goes away. There's a minus and a minus, so it gives me the I. And it happens there. So although here we think the evolution is continuous as a function of theta, when you start to think about it this way, I can think is it's a certain amplitude of getting state not changing and a certain amplitude different, which with a discrete sine flip. Okay? So that's a simple example of this, which is more general. Okay? So in general, this, the evolution of this, will be given by the CPTP map that we mentioned 2 days ago with some Krauss operators. And the Krauss operators are a function of exactly what these things are. So we have the quantum version of the noise. Right? Okay, encoding. what is a quantum version of an encoding? An encoding is subspace C of the Hilbert space. It's a map from your Hilbert space, or from some states that he'll call 0 and 1, plus some extra that we call ancillas, to a piece of the Hilbert space. So I'm thinking about this Hilbert space being there, and I'm saying the subspace. So initially, you start with one qubit. You map it to a higher Hilbert space, but you pick up a two-dimensional subset of the Hilbert space. The next piece is to talk about the error correction. So in fact, I'm going to generalize this a little bit, saying a code is really a triplet. Here we have the subspace of the Hilbert space. We have a noise, a quantum operation. And then we have what is called a recovery operator. Okay? And we'll say that an error correcting code, a code which corrects, is one such that this operation R on an element of this code, a state which is in the code, gives me back that state. Yeah. So what we are really looking at is an inverse of the noise. And that's a little bit surprising, because if we think about the noise of something which is not unitary, we're asking here, let's find something which is the inverse. And definitely, if this thing would be unitary, it'll be easy. It'll be U dagger. But we have something which is not unitary, but we are asking it to be reversible. So how can something which is not, which has, seems to have an arrow of time in it, can be reversed? So it turns out that not any code you can do this. There's some certain conditions that you need on this and this so that you can find the recovery. You can prove that asking that this is true is equivalent to the following. So let's assume that the cross operator corresponding to E, I'm going to call them E alpha. So rho final is equal to sum over D alpha of E alpha rho initial E alpha dagger. So this was the definition of the cross operator that we saw 2 days ago. I'm going to take psi. And I'm going to assume that I want to encode one qubit of information, but you can generalize it. So I'm going to say this is defined by IL, where there'll be two. The encoded zero, the L is called the logical. I could have put a small e for encoded, and I have the one there. But I'm going to write it as I is zero or one. And then the condition that we have this is equivalent to this one. All right. Now I'm going to explain to you why is that true. Okay. What we want is to be able to reverse the effect of the noise. So think about my Hilbert space, and then you'll again suffer of my artistic talents. I have my Hilbert space, and I'm thinking of having one qubit is a two-dimensional space, so I'm going to write it like this. And when the noise comes in, it's going to map this to another one. So here's the one, here's the one, the zero, and this is will be E0 on one, E0 on the zero, encoded. And then you'll have another one when you look at the other noise, another of this in the Hilbert space, okay? If you want to reverse it, you want to be sure that there's no overlap between any of the encoded zero and its noise, and the way it gets affected, the noise, with any of the ones. They need to be orthogonal to each other. Because if they overlap, the zero and the one through the noise kind of end up to overlap, then you won't be able to know which piece belongs to the zero encoded and the one encoded. So this is what this equation tells you when delta ij is equal to, when I is not equal to j. Okay? That this affected by a noise, and let's say this is a zero, and this is the one, has to always remain orthogonal to that part. Okay? Because if it's not orthogonal, you cannot back it up and find where you came from. Okay? So that's the first part. The second one is when I is equal to j. This becomes 1, and we have this piece. So when I is equal to j, what you get is that the okay, you have these two things are equal to each other. This thing is independent of the I and the j. And why is that? It's because when you do something like this, you want to be sure that these will give you a probability of mapping the one. So this vector is going to shrink by this probability. And this one is going to shrink also. You want them to shrink the same amount. Because if this one shrinks more, then suddenly you have a superposition, you'll change that angle. So you want them to shrink the same way, so the inner product remains the same. So that's what this condition tells you, the part where I is equal to j. So this tells you that you you can invert the effect of the noise, and you can recover the information. Okay. Now, this doesn't tell you how you do that recovery. Here I told you, you just measure the bits and you take the parity. So we cannot do it, so that R is not done exactly that way, but if this is satisfied, you know there must be an operation that brings you back to the state. And to explain exactly how it happens, I'm going to give you an example. It turns out that when you do NMR, for example, or most technology, the phase errors occur more often than bit flip errors, because the phase errors are typically in the energy basis. You don't need energy to make a sign flip. You need energy to do bit flip. And in NMR, there's a factor about 10 to 100 between the two. So let's make the assumption right now that the error is only type of this error. So I'll assume, instead of having something which is coherent, I'll say either we have a Z error or we don't have. Okay? It turns out that the smallest code to do this takes 3 qubits. Okay? And here's what the code looks like. We have alpha 0 plus beta 1. We start with 2 other qubits in the state 0. And then we do 2 control not. And so this is going to map the state alpha 0 plus beta 1 with the control not to alpha 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1. And the second qubit, the second control not, is going to map this. So this is alpha 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1 times the state 0. And here we get the state alpha 0, 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1, 1. Okay. In fact, it looks very similar to that code that we had up here, right? But notice that it is not alpha 0 plus beta 1 three times, right? Because if you would do it three times, then you would be doing cloning. And we know we cannot do this. So what we've done here is really, as I said, going in the Hilbert space and going a specific direction of the Hilbert space, a specific two-dimensional subspace by this. Now we want to correct z error, not x errors. So this looks very similar to what we have. So how do we go from x to z and z to x? A y rotation or LMR. So let's do an LMR transform, which will transform this into alpha plus 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 beta minus minus minus. Okay? Now, what is z on plus minus? Okay, so it's z on 0 plus or minus 1. So if I have 0 plus 1, I put a z, I'll get 0 minus 1. And if I have 0 minus 1, it'll become 0 plus 1. So this is equal to minus plus. So z flips a bit. It's a different basis of having the bit flip in x. So now noise comes in. And then you get, we'll assume right now that you have either 1, 1, 1, no error, or 1z at one of the places. And then we're going to look at what happened to this state. Really, I should use the density matrix to represent this. But if I start to write a density matrix with these things, I'm going to write more and more things. So I'm going to be a little bit shorthanded in notation. So we have these three noise operator. We'll call them E0 is 1, tensor 1, tensor 1, with some probability. And I won't worry right now what is its probability. It will be 1 minus 3p. E1 is z1, tensor 1, tensor 2. E2 is z2. And E3 is z3. Okay? So if I take this and I write it, I get, for this case, alpha plus 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 beta minus minus. It hasn't changed. If the z1 appears, it's going to take a z1 on this, and we're going to get alpha minus plus 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 beta plus minus minus. And the other ones will be plus minus plus plus beta minus plus minus alpha plus plus minus plus beta minus minus plus. Okay? Now, notice. So what I've done is I've applied this to this, right? So notice that these always remain orthogonal, that this is always orthogonal to this, 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 and this. And this is orthogonal to this, 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 and this is orthogonal to this, and this, and this. So it's all orthogonal to each other. So this condition there is satisfied. And for the delta ij, then I would have to put the, well, you can see that the probability between this and this is not changing. That is, I remain with alpha and beta. I don't get something with beta over 1 over square root of 2, for example. It remains the same on the other part. So you get a superposition of this. Okay, and now we would like to go back and recover that state. So how would you do this? If I go and measure these bits, I'm going to collapse on this side, or I'm going to collapse on that side. So I cannot do that. I need to know what is the error that's occurred without knowing what is the value of the bit. And here's one way you can do this. You undo your encoding. Okay? So the pluses are going to go to zeros, and the minus are going to go to ones. Okay? And then we're going to do the control not and the control not. So this is going to be mapped to the state 0, 0, because the control not is going to flip those two. Now, this one is a bit more tricky. We have a 1 first, and then it's going to, these ones will become 0, 0, but because they get flipped, we'll get alpha 1 plus beta 1, and then we'll get 1, 1 here, because these two get flipped, but here don't, they don't, so suddenly it separates. So 0, 1, 0 plus beta 1, 0, 1 is going to give me alpha 0 plus beta 1. And then 0, 1. And if you do the last one, you'll get alpha 0 plus beta 1, 1, 0. Now, you got back to the state here. But you didn't here. So how do you go back that initial state? Now you can do the magic thing, or the surprising thing. You go and measure the last two bits. Measuring the last two bits is not going to affect the first qubit. If you get this, you don't do anything. If you get 1, 1, then you flip that bit. And then you get alpha 0 plus beta 1. Everywhere. So the error that we had encoded here, okay, has a chance of flipping our bit, doing a unitary transforming here, and then give us a different value of the last two bits, which we call the syndrome. And if you measure the syndrome, then you know what to do in this particular code, how to do. And this is the error correction procedure. Okay? So the error correction procedure is a control not on the first qubit. And then it works. So now you know how to do error correction. Now, an interesting piece is when we measure these two things here, and then you say, could we do this straight here instead of having to do the decoding? What we're really looking at is we're not reading the bits here. We're just looking at the difference between the first and the second bit, which gives us this number, or between the first bit and the third bit. So, and to know the difference of the bit, you don't need to know the bits. You just need to know that they are different. And you can see this here, that minus and plus, well, you know the parity, okay. The parity here is 0 because they are the same, but here they are different, it is different there too. So by measuring the parity, you don't collapse this way, the state. So a different way of doing the circuit, we encode, we could have brought two more qubits. You put them in the state 0. Okay? The noise comes in. And then you make a parity between these two, and a parity between the first one and the third one. where the condition here is being on plus or minus instead of being in zero. So I could put some Adam R if you want to do the condition different. But the point here is what we are measuring really is I think it's x1, x2, and x1, x3. I want to be sure I get this right. Okay, so here's an example of one error correcting code which corrects for phase error. So a couple of other things so that we need to know. What do we do? In general, we'll have, when we written here, some x error, some z error, and maybe a combination of x and z. So how do we generalize this?
I have a question. I'm a bit confused now with that.
So I'm going to bring this thing back if I can push the right button.
Yes, with the error correction, you're flipping ones into zeros. I mean, you wrote it alpha 0 plus beta 1. I guess that should be alpha 0 plus beta 0, but.
Absolutely. You guys should catch. Thank you for catching. So it has flipped both of them.
So it flips both of them.
Yeah. So the quantum operation that we do has to be blind to, is always linear. So if you have a 0 or 1, the same, if you do a flip operation, it should flip if it is a 1 or if it is a 0. OK, so what I'm going to do now is give you a code which corrects not only for phase error, but for bit flip error. And I'm going to just state it. And then I'm going to argue that if I have the 0 encoded, which is 0, 0, 0, plus 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, plus 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, plus 1, 1, 1, for my encoded 0, so I'll need 9 bits. Okay? And the 1 is equal to 0, 0, 0, minus 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, minus 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, minus 1, 1, 1. Okay, so it's a 9 qubits broken down in triplets. Because it's a superposition of zeros and ones, if there's a bit flip, then we can discover what it is, because one of these will flip, and if you make the measurement of a set of parities, and the sets of parities will correspond to measuring z1, z1, z2, z2, z3, Z3, Z4, up to Z8, Z9. If we flip these bits, then these parity are going to flip. And by looking at what is the answer of which one has flipped, which is the parity, then I'll know if any of these 9 bits has flipped. And we assume there's only one error. And then if we want to measure if there's a sign flip instead, what we're going to do is measure the parity that corresponds to some of these three phases. So if there's a z error on the 6 qubit, the 6 qubit is this one. And it will get set with this one. Okay? It's going to flip this to a plus and this one to a minus. But we can make a parity which measures this and this and this. And this is going to flip. We'll know that this one in the middle has changed. And then we can go and correct it. Okay? So this is called a short code. The same short as the factoring algorithm taught about error correction. So people in the community challenged him that it was great to have a factoring algorithm, but this would never work. So Peter found these codes. And once you have this, you start to think, well, can you do better? Can you do a smaller code instead of 9? So it's easy to explain on the board that this works for any bit flip or sign flip. But it's a little bit harder for other codes. And turns out that Andrew Steen found a code which took 7 qubits. And some other people in the community found some with 5 qubits. And you can show that 5 is the minimum you can do. Now, the way I show you this code was guesswork. People thought, OK, bit flip, sign flips are a bit like bit flip out to the NMR. We knew the code that worked there. And if we encode it the right way, we get this. Here, again, is there a systematic way to find codes? And the answer is yes. And that's at least a family of code is called the stabilizer code. And what I want to do in the next few minutes is start talking a little bit about the stabilizer code. And tomorrow, we'll go back to some of these elements. And in particular, I assume here that there was only one error. But if the error is an independent from bit to bit or qubit to qubit, then there'll be 2-qubit errors. But it'll be very similar to what happened in the classical case. The point is that the error probability, if you don't encode, is p. And when you encode, it becomes cp squared. Okay? So if c is smaller than cp squared is smaller than p, then it's worth doing this. We also assume, and here, that when I do the encoding, there's no error that comes in there. When I do the decoding, I think there's no error. So there's a next question is, when trying to do error correction, will induce more errors than what you're trying to do? And in principle, the answer could be yes and no. But people showed that here's a construction that makes it robust to error even when you do the operation. I'll give you the idea of how this robustness comes about. And then I'll tell you, with this construction, then you go back. And you remember that I told you for the classical code that error correction works when p is smaller, cp squared is smaller than p. When you do things fault-tolerant, what happens is that you increase the value of c because you have to do more things to check to be sure that you don't induce errors. You can do it, but it costs you an increasing c, which means that p has to be smaller and smaller for error correction to work. And then once you have this, you have all the elements for the accuracy threshold theorem. But before I go there, let's go and talk about stabilizer. Maybe I should have. In here, I told you what is the parity for calculating if there's a bit flip. The parity to calculate if there's a sign flip is given by this operator. And so this is equivalent of the parity of Z1, Z2 if you would reduce it to a 3-bit code. And the other one is XXX, 1, 1, 1, between Z1 and Z3. So it's a form of parity which is very similar. So from this, And if you look at these parities, you will realize that these codes are eigenstate of all these operators with eigenvalue 1. So you can describe the code not by giving it this long piece, but by giving you the operator, a set of operators, and you look at the eigenstate of eigenvalue 1, and they'll give you a code. And this is the idea behind the stabilizer. Instead of looking at the expansion of the code in terms of superposition of different state, I'm going to give you a set of operators, and I'll say, if you take the eigenvalue 1 of these common eigenvalue 1 state, eigenstate with eigenvalue 1, then that will be your error correction code. And when you want to look at the effect of the noise, you look at the effect of the operator for the noise, how do they change as a function of these parities. Okay? And it turns out that if you learn classical error correction, there's something which is very similar in classical error correction. You get matrices which describe codes, matrices of parity which describe codes. And the commutation or anti-commutation of these matrices with the error gives you where the locations of the different errors. So that was the idea. And this told us that quantum error correction at the end is not that different than classical error correction. It just looks in a different, slightly different picture. Okay, so we're going to call the stabilizer. Of a code. Code is a subspace of the Hilbert space. S is the set of operator M, which belongs to the Pauli group. I'll come back in a second for n qubits, such that M times psi is equal to psi for all code words or state that belongs to all code words psi. Okay? So we have a code described by a set of state psi. So what you have in mind is the 0L, the 1L up there. We've given a few examples of this. So the stabilizer is the set of these operators so that the state in the code are eigenstate with eigenvalue 1. The Pauli groups is the group of the tensor product of the Pauli matrices. So, and you've seen this again and again. In NMR, we use this all the time, these x, y, z. Here, we look at the tensor product again. Okay. So for 1 qubit, it's 1, x, y, and z. For 2 qubits, there's 16 of them. And for 4 to the n for n qubit. The set of these matrices form an abelian group, and we'll use this a little bit further. So S, in general, is smaller or included in P of n. Okay, and we look at this subgroup so that the minus 1 is also part of the group. We don't include it in the stabilizer. So this specify S specifies a code, as I mentioned, and we're going to call this set of states. Okay, so that N psi is equal to psi, as the stabilizer is defined. Okay, for all M belonging to S. So this is like the inverse. If I give you a set of M and I say this is a stabilizer of a state, then I'm saying go and find what are the states corresponding to that. The set of states which have this property, you just look at all these M's that you have. Think about one, Z1, Z2, Z3, Z1, Z2, and Z1, Z3 as we add as a parity matrices. Go and find these states and you'll find the states which were eigenstates alpha the plus 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 and the minus 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 as an example. Okay. Now, what is the size of that code, T? So how many states are included in there? So the answer is 2 to the k, okay, where k is equal to n minus r. N is the number of qubits that we have, and r is equal to the number of generators of s, okay, or the number of m's that we have. So example of this, the 3-qubit code we had there, at n equal to 3, how many generators that we had? We had Z1, Z2, Z1, Z3, so we had 2 generators. So k is equal to 1, and indeed, the size of the code is 2 to the power 1, which is 1 encoded qubit. Okay. In the case of the Shor code, n is equal to 9. How many generators we had? 1, 2, 3, 4. There was 8 of them. 9 minus 8, there was 1 encoded qubit again. If we would drop one of these generators, the last one, for example, then we have a higher dimensional space, but we would see that it doesn't correct all the space. Okay. Now, the eigenvalues of the stabilizer, okay, will identify, okay, the errors. They are the parity matrices, in some sense. And we've seen already this in action. So consider an error E, which belongs to the Pauli group, okay, an X error or a Z error, okay. Then, and then M is one of the stabilizer belonging to M. If the commutation is equal to 0, then we have M times psi, M times E times psi is equal to E times M times psi. So this is one error. This is an element of the stabilizer, okay? This on psi is equal to 1 because it's part of stabilizer. So this is equal to that. So now this tells us that this is an eigenstate with eigenvalue 1. Okay. So E times psi is a plus 1 eigenvector. Okay. If the commutation with a plus sign in it is equal to 0, then we get that E times E times psi is equal to minus E M psi is equal to minus E psi, because M times psi is equal to 1. And so this is an eigenvalue minus 1. Okay. These will be the error that we can distinguish. Okay. So when we have an error where this is E M plus M E is equal to 0, so we can look at the errors that we have. I give you the stabilizer, you look at the commutation relation or anti-commutation relation. When you have this, you know that you will be able to distinguish these errors. When you have this, it's an error that you won't be able to distinguish. So you can, if I go the other way around. Instead of giving you a noise, I give you a set of operators and say, this code is good with respect to what kind of noise. We'll go and look at these poly matrices and say, do they commute or not? And you'll know which errors you can correct. Okay. So tomorrow, I will look at what do these operations correspond to. And it will correspond to transformation of the state within the code when you want to act. If you want to go from a logical 0 to a logical 1, these will be the operators that you are going to use. And these will be the operators which kind of, as I mentioned, are the noise. Okay, so these are the operators that you can correct, and I'll come back to this. And I'll give you an example. I've already given you an example of the stabilizers for the short codes. And what I'll do is I'll give you the stabilizers for the 7-qubit code of Steen. And if you want to do a nice exercise, is go and get the superposition of the states that correspond to this. You'll see something which is very complex. But if you write it in terms of stabilizer, it is very compact. And same thing for the 5-bit code. And so that's what I'm going to do tomorrow. And once we have this, then I'll go back to the accuracy threshold. And that'll be it for quantum error correction. And then the rest of the time, I'll talk about QKD. And on Friday, if there's a little bit more time, I might talk about private quantum channel, which is a little bit of generalization of ideas of QKD. And Aggie reminded me that I mentioned about the LIGO experiments that now can be thought as a quantum sensor. And so I'll leave this for the free questions at the end. Okay. So.
Is minus I part of the Pauli group?
Yes.
So then the S that should be equal.
Is this the only two options that I can use surrounding means?
So if these are Pauli operators, yeah. So if you have two Pauli operators, they either commute or they anti-commute.
Can you have errors that are not Paulis?
In general, yeah. So you could have something which would, you could say one of your cross operator is 1 plus y. Now, and this tells you that there is some form of coherence between the x and the y operation. In general, we don't look at these too much. If you correct x and z, you will also correct the y and the coherence of it. So you don't worry. But you could have a code which corrects only for x, and then you would say it wouldn't correct for that coherence part. Okay. Oh, yeah.